Well, my next guest this hour, Craig Oliver, has written his insider's account when he was head of politics and communications for David Cameron about Brexit. David Cameron, the sitting Prime Minister at the time, the one who called the referendum. And in a way, Craig Oliver's book becomes a reflection on the way we do politics these days. It starts with three quotes, the most powerful being one from Boris Johnson, who flip-flopped around before he finally decided which side to support, the Leave side. He wrote this 10 days after the referendum voted to leave the EU. So what was it about, wrote Boris? People's emotions matter even when they don't seem wholly rational. There is among a section of the population a kind of hysteria, a contagious mourning of the kind that I remember in 1997 after the death of the Princess of Wales. It's not about the EU, of course, dot, dot, dot. And there the quote finishes in suspended animation. Well, I'm hoping that Craig Oliver, or Sir Craig, I believe, can tell us more. His book is called Unleashing Demons. I spoke to him a few days ago when I was rather riddled with a cold.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. So if it wasn't about the EU, and I can think of quite a few things the Brits were grieving about, what did Boris Johnson mean? And why did you find it so significant that you put it on your frontispiece?
I was sort of quoting him ironically, I suppose, because he was saying that a lot of Remainers were terribly upset about it, and what they weren't really upset about was about leaving the EU. And I thought it was quite ironic because actually during the campaign, it felt to me that a lot of people who voted Leave weren't really arguing about the EU. They were arguing about their concerns and how they felt in a globalised world and in a world where there was a lot of immigration and where they felt insecure. So I just thought it was interesting that Boris, after it all, was saying that other people had been emotional when so much of the campaign had been emotional on both sides.
Which is, I presume, it sort of goes to the core of your book, the name Unleashing Demons. It was something that David Cameron himself said when you asked him to sum up the argument against a referendum. He said, "You could unleash demons of which ye know not." So he was onto it too. It's just that there's a feeling that he sort of cavalierly disregarded what he actually knew.
I think it's easy to say that, but the reality is that this had been a slow train coming in British politics for a long time, and it arrived in the station on David Cameron's watch. We'd had 40 years in the EU and a lot of Euroscepticism, probably for about 30 years of that time. In 2014, UKIP, the UK Independence Party, not only did well in the European elections in this country, they actually won them. We had scores of Conservative MPs that were rebelling on everything and everything to do with Europe. We had a popular press who were campaigning for Leave. So the pressure had become unsustainable, particularly for a Conservative Prime Minister. And David Cameron could have said, "I'm not holding the referendum," but I suspect the reality would be that the party would have replaced him with somebody who would have done.
Yes, I mean, I noticed in one of the reviews, The Guardian puts it, I think, quite bluntly, the personality contest between Tory big beasts also obscure what Downing Street felt was the culmination of a long-nurtured plan by backbenchers to destroy Cameron. It wasn't really Dave versus Boris, said one number 10 strategist. I don't think it was you. It was a well-organised right-wing coup. Now, is that still your view?
No, I don't think that that was my view. I think that the reality is that there definitely was a lot of people in the Conservative Party and certainly in UKIP become their life's work to leave the European Union. And they felt very, very strongly and very, very passionately about that. And they felt that it superseded many other things. And it went well beyond normal things like who is the leader of the Conservative Party, who is the Prime Minister. Many people felt it was more serious than that and they dedicated their lives to achieving it.
And do you, because you say that if he hadn't promised the referendum in 2015, the Conservative Party in the country would have become almost ungovernable. I have to say, looking on, it doesn't seem like that. Are you sure, again, that you didn't get things way out of perspective?
The Conservative Party would not have accepted there not being a referendum. Now, so you're asking me a question when there has been a referendum. Now, if there hadn't been a referendum and David Cameron actually had to promise that in his 2015 election manifesto, all hell would have broken loose. So for me, it was inevitable. You can't have a situation where in 2014, the UK Independence Party is winning an election, where scores of MPs are rebelling on anything and everything to do with Europe, and where you have this kind of campaigning going on, it becomes unsustainable. Mm. And the reality is, it's not as if somebody just woke up one morning and said, oh, I'll tell you what, let's just do it, let's get it over with. You do not make this kind of decision, this life or death decision in politics, without having to have a very, very good reason for doing it.
Yes, I just want to play to you something from Matthew Parris, the former Conservative MP and now commentator, who told my colleague Andrew West on the day of the results, because I was I was actually in the UK, as to how he was seeing things.
Well, some people say that he only promised the referendum because he didn't seriously expect to be leading a Conservative majority government. He expected that at best he'd be leading another coalition government, and that the Liberal Democrat part of the coalition would veto the idea of having the referendum. So he made the promise in order to add to Conservative votes and in order to try to unite his party without thinking he'd have to bring it into effect. I don't know if he was as cynical as that.
It's a pretty devastating old judgment, particularly because he went on to win that majority. That's why I'm really dwelling on this idea of, you know, whether you got things out of perspective.
I just think that the reality of making decisions in politics is that there's always somebody as a commentator always try and come up with a clever counterfactual, and maybe this would have happened and maybe that would have happened and maybe this is the reason why we should have done that. The reality is it did happen. We did get to the 2015 election with a promise to have a referendum. It would not have been sustainable for David Cameron as Prime Minister not to promise that. He won that election. He therefore had to hold a referendum. And he also said the other reason that Matthew Parris, I think, is actually wrong there is one of the things in the campaign was, is there any government that you would lead, coalition or majority, that did not have a referendum? And David Cameron was very clear, no, there wasn't. So even if there had been a coalition opportunity, he would have had to resign because, again, his position would have been unsustainable.
Let me just tell listeners that Craig Oliver, Sir Craig Oliver is my guest, and he's written this quite arresting book called Unleashing Demons, The Inside Story of Brexit. I suppose the reason why I am dwelling is what it really made me think, Craig, was the business of persuading people, of educating the public about the genuine dilemmas involved. You gave yourself 4 months, really, as you say, to educate people on the critical link between Europe and the economy. It somehow or other there's an emphasis on tactics, seems to me, rather than the overall strategy, a sort of very serious intent about persuading people that that's what democracy is, that you've got to make trade-offs and choices, and they're huge, and you can't just have irrational emotions like Boris Johnson refers to.
I think the reality is, if you're asking me, was 4 months long enough? Well, clearly it wasn't because, you know, we didn't win. But also I think that the reality is you'd had 40 years of negative publicity about the EU in this country. No, it had been a sort of friendless organisation in the sense that no party leader had really been very, very strongly advocating it. But people's view of the EU had been coloured by 40 years of very negative stories about it. And was there enough time to persuade people? No, there wasn't. Towards the end of the campaign, David Cameron said, we're trying to persuade people to vote for an EU they don't like, an immigration they don't want. And what was most interesting about this is that what happens in politics is most people think that by focusing on the economic issues and the economic risk, what James Carville said was, is the economy stupid? That will ultimately trump everything. Now, this is a campaign where, interestingly, it didn't trump everything. It certainly didn't trump immigration. No. And that was a massive issue in the UK.
Indeed. I mean, that is so interesting in your book that there was some sort of cultural drift underway. People felt alienated, not listened to, not represented by the government of the day, some sense that they'd lost their country. Now, could you sense that that was underway, or when did you sense that was underway?
About 30 days before the actual vote referendum, the net migration figures into the UK were published, and they were 330,000 coming in. Now, that is more than three times than the government's target. And at that point, every news story pretty much, or every lead news story, and all the focus of the campaign swung to immigration. It became a massive issue. And for the Remain campaign and people saying stay in the EU, we didn't really have an answer. Because to be a member of the EU, you have to have unlimited freedom of movement. And when you said that to people, they really didn't like it. And it was the Leave campaign was able to leverage that and use that very, very well. Now, arguments about our entire economy is predicated on the need for immigration, and the Treasury models for how our economy work are all about having that immigration. It just wasn't washing with people.
After the decision to leave, we saw considerable protests from younger Brits angry that their future was being destroyed. It was very powerful, actually. And yet, of course, it was the 18 to 24-year-olds who mostly didn't vote. And if they had, Remain would have won. Now, you really think about this apathy to vote, yet eagerness to protest, which is what we've also seen in the Trump situation. What's going to happen here?
I agree with you. I think that what was really dispiriting was that the group that I think had the most to lose from leaving the EU was definitely younger people because of jobs, opportunities, chances in life. And it was really concerning that they did not turn out. And as you say, if they turned out in the same numbers as higher, older groups, older cohorts, we would have won. But they didn't. You're right. A motivated group of young people who I'm sure did vote, did protest afterwards. But when you see tens of thousands of people on the street, it looks like a big number. But in the reality of 35 million people voting, it's obviously just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, look, I think it's just that question of how you ask yourself on page 404, will politics find a way to properly engage them rather than play cynical games, attempting to confirm their worst fears about the world? This question will and should trouble us in the coming years. It's that sense, as I read you, and I certainly am dwelling upon this, how does one encourage people to realise that there are real gains that have been achieved over the years, that things could get worse if they don't engage? It's turning out to be quite a little exercise.
We live in a very complicated world where arguments are complicated and where politics often feels like people shouting at each other or insisting that the other person's motivations are entirely wrong and that theirs are right, making things black and white, making things binary, when of course they're more difficult than that. And that's very alienating for a lot of people. They find it hard to cope with who's right, who's wrong, and they switch off. And it is a real problem, particularly in an era where news is increasingly in bite-sized form or not listened to or not engaged with at all or very selectively.
Mm. Look, a couple of other sort of specifics about it. David Cameron said he would stay on as Prime Minister if he lost the referendum vote, but he didn't. He left the morning the results came in because, as you write, he felt he couldn't be responsible for delivering Brexit when he doesn't believe in it. And yet you say that, in fact, he knew he wouldn't stay on, but he knew he wanted the referendum not to be about him. So that's been something that a lot of people have commented on.
I think that people need to be grown up about this. And the reality is that there's certain questions in politics that people really know the answer to, but that it's impossible for politicians to answer, because the reality of that is that it then just creates a situation where the entire referendum would have become focused on him. And yeah, I mean, I'm being honest about it. That is a very, very difficult question for a politician to answer because it is designed to trip them up. And yes, I think he thought there was a possibility where he could lose and just about stay on. But I suspect and pretty much know that in his heart of hearts, he knew that wasn't the case. But I think he also knew that if he answered that question directly, if we vote to leave, I will resign, that would have motivated a huge number of people to turn the referendum into something else.
You're quite critical of Theresa May too, the new British Prime Minister, that she remained silent throughout most of the campaign. You think it was a strategy, don't you?
I'm not critical of her. I think what I'm trying to do in the book is just reflect what really happened. Now, the reality was it was very difficult for us to get Theresa May to go out and do stuff during the campaign. And when
She was Home Secretary, of course, wasn't she?
Yeah, she said very difficult things or created news stories, which made it far harder for us. Now, I'm sure she was entirely sincere in her view. I'm sure she didn't feel, passionately that it would be very difficult for us if we left the EU. But did it make life very hard for David Cameron and the Remain campaign? Yes, it did.
Did anyone check the Constitution, dare I ask, before making the decision about the referendum that only Parliament can trigger Article 50 to begin the process of leaving the EU? And the other question I have to ask, why was it a simple majority? Why didn't you do a two-thirds, for instance, which would make quite a change?
On the Constitution thing, I think anybody who knows anything about the British Constitution knows it's almost a technicality that on an issue that changes the rights of people, Parliament must vote on it. And it's almost, if you talk to a legal professional about that, they'll just say, look, it's just taken as read. It's just not an issue. And when it went to the High Court, that was the case. And when it went to the Supreme Court, that was the case. And nobody really was that surprised. There were lots of arguments about whether or not ministers could have royal prerogative. And what that means is that they can have execute an order. But nobody really seriously thought that was the case. In terms of having more than 50%, I just say to people, if we'd had a situation where the majority of this country had voted to leave the EU and we were still in it, we would be having another referendum very quickly off the back of it. And also, if you'd set the bar at 55% or 60%, the reality is that that would probably have encouraged more people to vote, thinking it's not likely to happen. So there was no real good reason for it, especially as when previous referendums in this country, it's always been a straightforward majority, or certainly in recent years. We had an issue on the voting system recently in the Scottish referendum, and both of them were straightforward 50-50.
Well, Sir Craig Oliver, thank you very much indeed. It certainly is, as I said, it turns out to be an extraordinary reflection on the day-to-day business of modern politics. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Craig Oliver, former Director of Politics and Communication for British Prime Minister David Cameron, and his book, Unleashing Demons, The Inside Story of Brexit, is published by Hodder and Stoughton. And I know a couple of you have written to me about it, particularly Mark Zanker wrote me a very interesting letter about using the rule of law and whether plebiscites play a role in British political life. So would welcome your thoughts. If you go to our website, you can see how you can leave your thoughts.